touch to me. Turn on the gas and make me feel fine. All I wanna say is, just give me some hot pizza. I really need it tonight. Hot pizza, come on and give me a bite. Hot pizza.
Hey folks, Steve Siddall here with yet another episode of Financial Pizza. It's the only podcast that features clips and more from some of the best financial advisors heard on radio and in podcasts all around the country every week. We bring it all to you in 30 minutes or less. Now say hello to Chrissy Paradis, producer extraordinaire and co-host right here. Chrissy?
Well, hello, Steve.
Hey.
I'm so happy to be here. The seasons are changing and so are some important topics that we're going to discuss.
Right. We're going to hear from Coach Pete DeRuda having a mind-blowing game of Monopoly. That'll make sense when you hear it. Joe Murphy from Murphy Wealth Management's got a great clip on Robert Shiller, who is a renowned economist, and I think you're going to like what he says.
And I have a clip from Chris Longworth, Seattle-based fella, who is a pretty big Seinfeld fan, and he found some examples in Seinfeld, and they all relate to financial planning. So we're going to see what Jerry, Elaine, George, and Kramer can teach us about preparing for retirement.
So we both saw this story. Well, you saw one version. I saw another, I think, about grandfluencers, right?
Yes.
So we're talking about, this story was about a 93-year-old widow, retired factory worker. She promotes herself as Grandma Droenak. Get this, 12 million followers on TikTok, 1.9 million on Instagram. She boosted her annual income by six figures, thanks to,
wow.
I mean, she's doing fine in retirement at 93.
I mean, she's not doing fine. She's a ball. She's balling it.
She is, absolutely.
93. That is a ton of different income streams that she's able to get from those different social media sites, too. I mean, good for her.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it doesn't stop with the grandfluencer. There's another generation that is breaking into the influencer space on social media as well. And that's those folks that are, I guess they'd be Gen Xers. And we're going to hear from one really quick to set the stage.
It's not 1988 anymore. We have to, as parents, realize that the economy has changed. I understand inflation. Prices always go up. But I think that lately the wages are not keeping up with how big the inflation has gotten. I went out yet again with my son to go try to find an apartment he can afford. And we just kept getting backdrops or half the places I felt like should have been condemned that he could afford. And the other half, they're wanting four times your rent. I hear all the other Gen Zs and millennials in my comments saying that they finally feel seen, because I think us as Gen X, we forget that it's not the same as it is now for our kids. And we think, well, we did it, so they should be able to, too. And we need to be their advocate. I didn't have kids to watch them suffer their entire life.
That is Jessica McCabe, mother of a 25 and 28-year-old that lives in Alabama. She posted that video titled, What Happened to the American Dream? And it got 10 million views.
Oh, my gosh.
1.8 million likes. And she goes on to break down the differences between the time that she grew up and what her kids are facing, especially when it comes to the financial part.
I'll tell you, it's an interesting perspective, because I'm a bit older. I'm a boomer, sort of at the tail end of that. But, you know, we're starting to hear more from Gen X. They're getting in their 40s, their early 50s. That changes the whole landscape of retirement planning.
Absolutely, it does. And when you think about it, too, she didn't complain about this piece of the puzzle, but it definitely sounds like there's a strain on resources for a lot of Gen Xers. We've talked about the sandwich effect. Maybe one of your elderly parents or older parents are living with you, and also maybe one of your children is back at home after college. And that's been a challenge for Gen X. So I'm glad that folks are using these social media sites to speak about how they feel.
Well, you said on TikTok right now there's a big thing trending on 401ks.
Yes, 401k is a scam. Hashtag 401k, hashtag money. And it's a little bit worrisome because these influencers are saying that there's nothing that you can do really to, it's kind of the confirmation bias. They want folks to shun the tax deferred option and go towards a very interesting and odd alternative, I guess, in the variable annuity. Does that seem logical to you?
It doesn't make any sense at all.
I don't think so either, but this is one of the top trending.
A variable annuity. Now, we both know, have been here long enough and have heard the advisors day in, day out say, the only annuity I'll never sell is a variable.
Right, which is even more mind-blowing because these are folks that claim to be financial gurus they say they have qualifications, but there is no way, at least right now, to regulate the financial advice out there on social media, which makes shows like this, like your show, Steve, so much more important in the long run.
I'm going to go in a different direction now, more of a positive note on money. There are approximately 16 million American families that have wealth exceeding $1 million.
16 million.
That's 12% of the population. That's up from 9.8 million families in 2019. The Federal Reserve said last week that the average net worth of American families topped $1 million for the first time. Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing. And it's actually a bigger percentage than I would have thought had you not done the math, broke it down for me. But I think about the folks in that slice of the population, when you break it down even more, it kind of goes into one of my stories, which was they released the 10 richest people in the world.
Okay.
And 9 of the 10 people are Americans. Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, Larry Ellison, they all have either $100 billion or more. And Elon Musk is the richest person in the world right now. His fortune did fall by about a couple billion. It's up.
No big deal.
Because he didn't. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
He's like, I'll buy X and I'll be fine. But that is a lower number than I think. How many people would you have thought had over?
I would have said maybe 5%, 6%,
sure,
something like that. I mean, just based on the conversations that we have with advisors.
Yeah.
And, there is that whole thing out there, I got to have $1 million to retire. Well, I mean, apparently these Gen Xers and some millennials are getting there first.
Wow. Well, I mean, hey, if you can't beat them, join them.
Right. But that's it. You know what's dying out right now is that whole FIRE movement.
Oh, the financial independence, retire early
movement.
That's
the one, yeah. If you look around, it's kind of gone by the wayside. Because some of these folks that retired really young, they don't know what to do with themselves.
Right. Well, I mean, I could only imagine that it sounds great in theory. It was one
it
of those
does.
Those ideas that I think maybe died on the vine in terms of the practicality and long-term viability were lacking from the jump.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. Haunted houses. Let's talk some haunted houses.
Passed
Halloween. And did you know that only 4 states, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, and Minnesota, actually address the idea of paranormal activity in the context of a home sale? So there's only those 4 states. If there's been something going on, they got to be told.
I cannot believe that you brought this up. When I lived in Nevada, when I lived in Las Vegas, I worked with a gentleman named Clay Baker, and he was fascinated by this exact issue, because there's a website that you could figure out who lived in your house before you and if there were any hauntings for different states. But it couldn't be used to tank the sale.
Okay.
And there were only a few exceptions, and they added one more to the list in New England because, I mean, it seems like let's be honest, ghosts are probably in every state.
Oh, yeah, sure.
In every country.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, they're everywhere.
I mean, but, you could get a cheaper house maybe in one of those states if they have to recognize it legally.
Well, yeah, and it says in every state, neither seller nor agent can misrepresent the home's history if they're asked. How many people ask?
I mean, I've
bought a few houses in my life, and I've never asked that question.
You've never asked, is this on
is house haunted?
It makes me think that a lot of folks would just kind of glaze over, oh, okay, yeah, here's the specs of the house, here's what you want, and only if you're prompted, hey, what happened here, who lived here before us, or whatever, would you have to share that story? So it's like you both sides have to be forthcoming. But what's the worst thing that could happen? You just, you know, have a new roommate.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk this. You know, you're a millennial, right?
Yes.
Oh,
I
boy. So now, guess who's coming back? I tell you what, my daughters couldn't have.
This is the second concert that I ever went to.
Really?
I went to Backstreet Boys for the first concert.
Oh, of course you did.
Same year, in 1993, they came to the Dean Dome in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and Britney Spears was supposed to be headlining, but she, you know, messed up her ankle, so she did not perform. But I got to see NSYNC perform, and let me tell you, I've been to plenty of concerts since then. They were fantastic.
Entertainers?
They really are, all of them.
Yeah.
And I'm excited. I don't even think they ever left the scene.
Here's the thing. A Change.org petition, believe it or not, started back in September demanding that NSYNC's record company send them on tour, citing their timeless hits and unforgettable dance routines. You know, what is Justin Timberlake going to be there?
That to me would be he's the closer, right?
Yeah.
He's the person you need to have. And he focused on his solo career for a long time, but I remember in many interviews he had always left that door open, and he never left the band with the intention of blowing up to be the solo artist that he was. But I would pay for a ticket. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't pay Taylor Swift prices.
No, I don't think anybody would do that.
But I would love to see them perform again.
They're going to release their first single in more than 20 years. It's going to be featured in Trolls Band Together. Now, if you remember the first Trolls movie, that was there was a Justin Timberlake song, I got this feeling. That's from that movie.
Whoa.
And so now they're going to do it. I think there's a connection.
That's full circle. They're thinking about the long game. They said, okay, we brought you in, JT. Now we have to get the rest of your bros and finish this out.
That's
the right.
Right
way. That is incredible. Oh, I'm so excited.
All right.
It kind of goes hand in hand with one more story that I had, which was that of a favorite Christmas song. So it has been almost 30 years since Mariah Carey released this jam, and Mariah is still reaping the benefits from this instant classic. She's pulling in an estimated $2.5 million in royalties each year just from this anthem. Just this song. So Mariah is doing good still. This is the song that signals the beginning of the holiday season, November 1st at 12:01 a.m. every year.
All right. Well, good. I can start playing it.
Yeah. You should play it until we get to the new year, and you've got to start decorating. Get a Mariah poster in here.
Yeah, sure. We got to get to some advisors here before we run out of time. To do that, let's start with America's Wealth Coach, best-selling author, Coach Pete Neruda. In this clip, Coach, along with Thomas Lipscomb and Morgan Patrick, they're discussing a high-stakes, cutthroat game of Monopoly.
Like playing Monopoly, go fill the whole block up with the those were the greenhouses, right? Greenhouse Red Hotel?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
The hotels were red. I haven't played Monopoly in forever. When's the last time you played?
Wow. Probably two winters ago.
Okay, two winters ago. Yeah. Did you play a real board game or play online?
No. We played the real board game, and yep. I played with a really, really nice friend of mine and their family, and they had one kid who was making up his own rules, and I'm like,
It was always one.
We are going by the rules.
Yep.
And who won?
I did. Oh, see, Morgan said he followed the rules that he won.
Okay, so here's one that'll set people off who are listening to us. So, Morgan, does all the money go into the pot for free parking or not?
all the money?
What do you want?
All the fine money.
The fine money.
Yeah, fine money goes into free parking.
Okay, nice.
Where does it go in your house, Thomas?
Well, some people say you don't have anything at all on free parking. That is simply just an open square, and that you, and that all the fines don't pile up on it. So it's one of those.
It's free parking. So why is there a fine?
What are they called? Morgan Community Chest Cards and stuff like that.
There are taxes involved if you own properties, and instead of going to the
bank, you can let it pile into free parking. And so if you land there, whoever lands there gets the long shot.
Played that game. Maybe that's a rule we didn't play.
Yeah, exactly. There
free
you
parking.
Go.
You
exactly.
Didn't have any. Well, you're happy because you didn't lose any money. You didn't land on somebody's property. So you're saying you had to draw a community chest card when you went to free parking?
No, it's just if any fines were collected from community chest cards and stuff like that, instead of paying it to the bank, you'd pay it to the free parking.
Built up a separate pile, and whoever landed in free parking also got a benefit.
And if you had a boardwalk or one of those things, and then you landed on free parking, you could hotel it up in one turn.
Wait, you could put hotels on free parking?
No, on boardwalk though. By landing, like, say you landed on free parking, and all of a sudden you come into $3,000 or something. Yeah.
Okay. Buy a few hotels, put them on your properties.
You know, these days, maybe back then it wasn't as special, but these days any free parking is worth its weight in gold.
Around here, huh?
You know, I went to school at Carolina. Morgan, you did too.
Oh, wow.
You know, remember, we could park almost. I mean, it was easier to park back in the 80s, wasn't it?
Well, it was, but
it still was a game.
They got smart. They put some meters in there, and if you didn't have your pass for your parking, they fined you.
I had a friend that gave out the parking ticket. Well, you didn't give them out. He wrote up parking tickets to people, so I asked him for a couple blank ones.
Oh, really?
Then I put them on my car windshield, right, and it looked like I already had a ticket.
Oh, that's good.
Coach Pete's financial advice.
That's good.
From the 80s.
Clever.
Write a book.
I like it.
So it's just, we were talking about before the show, if we can put medical terms to financial terms, we had a little fun with that. Financial hypertension. Financial heartburn. You get any financial heartburn looking at your statements sometimes?
Yes.
How about a financial heart attack?
I don't want one of those.
That's when you turn the TV on and something bad really happened, and there's a negatives all over the screen, like talking about $1,000 negatives.
It's a financial pornography we talk about all the time. You start following it, you can't turn away from it.
Financial constipation. It's like having too much money in one place, you can't move it, so to speak. Right? Well, you won't let yourself. I mean, something. You need a catalyst.
You're stuck.
You need a catalyst. How about financial depression?
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah.
Financial Ozempic. That's when you lose money. I know it's going a little bit over. But anyway, financial fat grams. What if your financial... Because nowadays, when you go into even a restaurant or even on the menu, they show you all the good it is or bad it is for you.
Yeah.
What if before you bought something, you like financially, you could see how good or bad it was, and then historically what it's done for other people?
That's I like that.
Good. I like that.
And so that was, these are just financial diet. That's when you stop spending as much as you were. You get used to spending. It's like you get used to eating, don't you? But again, I still come back to the fact where it's very important to combine all your financial products and strategies into the main goal. And what is the main goal, you think, of putting money away to begin with?
Right. You want to be able to enjoy your retirement when you get there. So you plan well. You plan well before you get to retirement. And you work with a fiduciary that's going to not only walk you to retirement's door, get you all the way to the end.
Exactly. I mean, so it's not just starting. It's having – you start with the end in mind, we say, but no one ever wants the end to come.
True.
So life is a journey, not a destination. Once we get to the destination, well, gosh, it's over.
Yeah.
If the destination is what we think it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to make sure that our financial strategies will continue to pay our family even when we're not here. And we talked about a strategy a couple of weeks ago, how to turn taxable pennies into tax-free dollars. And a lot of people wanted to hear about that, utilizing life insurance concepts, getting the ability to have a long-term care policy built into your life insurance policy you don't have to pay for, a separate long-term care policy. In other words, taking your death benefit or some of your death benefit for your life insurance for you and using that to pay for your long-term care if you ever need to go to long-term care. In other words, if you have $1 million life insurance policy and the long-term care stay for a year would be $100,000, you just call the insurance company, say, hey, give me $100,000 out of my death benefit. I'm going to use it tax-free to pay for my long-term care. That makes sense. A lot of people have never heard of that.
Well, they don't know to ask the questions.
Right.
Sit down, educate yourself.
Being educated, being informed puts you ahead of the curve many times.
Well, it sure does. Coach Pete, Financial Safari, that's the show. You can text Pizza to 600-700. You can find the show weekends in Raleigh-Durham on 106.1 FM Talk.
only a visionary like Coach Pete could go from monopoly to free parking to financial hypertension to this turning taxable pennies into free tax-free dollars,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Only Coach Pete.
Sure. So let's go to Joel Murphy now.
Mr. Robert Shiller. Steve, are you familiar with Robert Shiller?
Have
you
heard of him? Yes.
Okay. So this guy, for a radio audience that may not be familiar, he is an economist. He is Ivy League all over the place. He is a Nobel Prize winner in economics. This guy actually has an economic indicator in real estate named after him, the Shiller Case Index.
Right.
So this guy, yeah, this guy's got a lot of credentials and he's got a lot of track record. But he wrote a book and he's been really pumping something called narrative economics. Steve, have you ever heard of narrative economics?
Not until we talked about it just a bit ago.
Okay. So it's trying to understand economic changes or major economic events by not only just looking at data or numbers, but looking at the story behind it. And one of the examples that he used, Steve, that I absolutely love was Bitcoin is a perfect example of narrative economics.
Great
back
description.
Yeah, exactly. And back when Bitcoin first started emerging, if you saw people that were buying Bitcoin and the price obviously went from zero to hero and one of the fastest we've ever seen in this country or in this world, the price appreciation was ridiculous. That didn't just get fueled because Bitcoin was a great vehicle. That was fueled by narrative economics, the word of mouth. It went viral. And if you asked 100 people to explain Bitcoin and how it worked, 99% of them could not do it. That's not good or bad, but what it exemplifies is how word of mouth and how our stories and how we relate to each other as human beings really can have a major impact on economic trends. So if we look back at, you know, the Great Depression, which Mr. Shiller studied, you know, we saw the excess of the 20s, the roaring 20s. People were buying stocks and just making obscene amounts of money. There was excess all over the place. People started down talking it, saying, this is folly. This is stupid. This doesn't make any sense. Something bad's going to happen. The next thing you know, we almost wished ourselves into one of the most massive, the Great Depression, and one of the most massive corrections in market history. Is that tied together or correlated perfectly? No. But if you look at some of Mr. Shiller's events like Bitcoin and how human beings and our stories and how we share and relate can really fuel or put an end to an asset class or an idea or a vehicle, it's absolutely amazing. And I found it fascinating. To me, to read, right, and this is the second time I read it, but the second time I read it was Bitcoin. And that, to me, was the big catalyst to say, you know what, Mr. Shiller probably has something here. Because if you think about Bitcoin in its essence, it's innovative, it's very complex, it's a mathematical theory, and people became really excited about it. But Steve, why do you think people became excited about Bitcoin? Was it the way it worked? Or maybe someone made a little bit of money that they knew and they told them about it. How do you think it went down?
I think it was a combination. And I think part of it, too, is just our fascination with something that's so new. We've never heard of this before. And it's not regulated.
It's a revolutionary way of using currency.
Right.
So the way of the future. You want to be a part of the future? Bitcoin is it. I don't want to miss the boat.
That was the story. I mean, you were talking about story. That was it.
Yeah. Yep. And there was FOMO, that fear of missing out.
Yep.
And there was also something called YOLO. You only live once.
Right.
And a lot of people went all in. But that explains to me the fuel that caused that parabolic, ridiculous upcraze in prices in Bitcoin when it was approaching its highs. And now we've seen it come back to earth a little bit. We're getting a little bit of oomph. Is it the future? We don't know. But the stories, the human stories are what really drove that. And economists throughout history, Steve, have shied away from any type of emotion in economics. It's just not something that these guys consider. You know, they're wearing their glasses, they're studying their statistics, they're not taking into account human beings and our ability to convey and our ability to pump each other up or our ability to bring each other down. And I think that is a very important ingredient in analyzing, especially for us here, because we don't sit here and study statistics all day long. If you really want to hit a good stock, the best thing that you can do is get in front of what? The biomass. You have to be one of the first guys in. How do you do that? If you can study human behavior, look at the trends that are happening. That is the oomph that maybe, you know, a one bagger on a stock, maybe, you make 10%, or, you know, you hit a 10 bagger. The emotion that drives these stock prices is something that you can better predict, I think, than the actual statistics that, you know, the Fed economists are using, you know, to talk about inflation or interest rates or what's going on with their economy. I'm more in the camp now of looking at this narrative economics and really looking at human behavior as a higher impact than economists have given it credit for. Does that make sense to you, Steve?
It makes perfect sense. Narrative economics, now that, I mean, again, thinking about things in a different way, that's how we learn. And that's what I'm doing. I'm learning.
Yeah. I mean, look, taking stories seriously, it's important when predicting what's next for our economy. And now with the advent of computers, technology, phones, we have more data than ever to analyze. And we can learn through market research, looking at social media, gathering information from internet searches. Technologies can help evolve how economists look and predict future events. So maybe we can have a better degree of accuracy in the future, Steve, when it comes to predicting some of these massive events that we've had in the past. Mr. Shiller is on record. He predicted the tech bubble. So this guy knows what he's talking about. In 2000, Truly. He was out hollering, saying these tech information stocks, this is bubbled out. Human emotion is driving these asset prices way above where they should be. And he accurately predicted that. He also accurately predicted the real estate crash. He was out there hooting and hollering back in 2006, saying these prices are too high. These prices are too high. And what he studied from that trend and that event of that real estate crash was he saw a thought change. People started thinking, hey, you know what? These prices are too high. You know, maybe we almost thought ourselves into a housing correction. But it's an interesting theory. I wanted to bring it up. And if you do get an opportunity and you're a dork like me, check out the book Narrative Economics by Robert Shiller.
And again, Narrative Economics, I've got a link to it at the bottom of this podcast. You can find it. It's on Amazon. It's cheap. And it's a good read.
I mean, that whole almost anthropological or deep dive into the spending. I mean, Joe Murphy never ceases to amaze me. He's just a brilliant fella, and he is not a nerd, like he called himself.
I know.
He is so intelligent, and he is the kind of guy that you want on your team.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And again, I mean, he's on every Sunday at WIND Chicago. Also, you can find the podcast wherever you get a podcast, on his website, which is mwmfinancial.tax.
To close things out, we're going to visit Seattle, where Chris Longworth takes the hot seat to explore a few classic Seinfeld moments that focused on investing and financial planning on the latest episode of The Money Professor. We're going to take a few quotes from Seinfeld, and we're going to put you, Chris, in the hot seat as to how each of these clips relates to the world of financial planning and preparing for retirement. You ready to dive
Chrissy,
in?
This is one of the best things I love about television is that it does emulate life. And
yes.
A lot of times what we see on sitcoms is that question that we all have in our mind, but are afraid to ask or afraid to explore. And so that's why I love these things. And they again, it is entertainment, but it has a shred of truth to it. And it does give us a relatability that we can apply to our daily life. And it's that aha moment if we allow it to be. So, yeah, let's dive in. Let's have some fun.
All righty.
I'm getting it.
You're getting what?
A stock.
What stock?
My friend Simons. He knows this guy. He made a fortune in the stock market. Now he's got some new thing. He wasn't even supposed to say anything. You guys should think about doing this, too.
How high is it supposed to go?
I don't know. But Simon said that if I wanted to get involved, he would tell me the exact right minute to sell. You want to do it?
What kind of company is it?
Well, Cendrax. Some sort of electronic thingy. It's gone up 3 points since I've been watching it.
What if I lose it?
Come on. We'll do it together. Come on.
All right.
So that is George Costanza and Jerry Seinfeld considering investing in a stock George learned about by a friend of a friend. And
that's like, you know, the proverbial my brother's uncle's cousin told
right?
me, right?
And Jerry has some reservations about it. He's like, what if I lose money? And George encourages him to do it with him.
Just do it. Come
and
on.
Chris, this feels so familiar to how folks hear about a hot stock tip and jump on it with no real knowledge of the product, possible outcomes, plan of action, besides maybe the prospect of a big payday in the future. What are your thoughts about this clip?
This is the greatest example of where peer pressure, you know, somebody you know, somebody you respect, somebody you like is doing something and they might not have full knowledge of what they're doing, but they're already committed to it and they want everyone they know to join in and commit to it as well. And that's where the emotional piece comes in. I mean, you don't want to disappoint your friend. You don't want to be left out. Mm-hmm. It's the, you know, fear of being left out and fear of missing out and all those things. I mean, all that stuff is real emotional play that the marketplace really does put in place. And so we have to separate ourselves from that. But this is what is happening here. We're watching Jerry get emotionally wrapped into this and he's being coerced by his good friend to, come on, just join in. Come on, can't get hurt, right? What's the worst that could happen?
Exactly. Right? And actually, the next clip features Jerry and Kramer discussing this hot stock that George presented Jerry with in the previous clip.
Bad news, my friend.
What? What news?
Zentrax.
Oh, come on. It's down again.
2.5 points.
Well, this is it. I'm selling.
Just give it a little more time.
I never should have gotten involved with this. I'm a nervous wreck. I'm not cut out for investing.
Chris, what are your thoughts?
I mean, how often? To everyone listening right now, have you ever had that pang of anxiety that you bought something and it's depreciating quickly before your eyes? You're watching your investment disappear.
Yes.
It makes you nervous. I mean, that's the whole point. And this is why, you know, we really have to have a foundation of understanding, a deeper knowledge of what are we doing and what are we investing in? Why are we investing in it? What is your intention for that investment? What do we expect from that investment? And what do we expect it to do for us? What must it do? Those are all the questions that one really has to explore before you can start really investing in anything that has risk involved to it. And then that's the other side is, how do you feel about that? And it's just like Jerry said, I'm a nervous wreck. It's tearing me up. I can't,
heart.
You know, I'm not cut out for this. And I mean, he's true. That's why most people don't pay attention. They turn it over to a broker who is a salesman of sorts, and they will take care of it. That way you don't have to worry about it. Think about it. They'll take care of you. How's that working out for you, right?
Yeah. Oh, it holds so true because that panicking that Jerry is experiencing, I think everybody can relate to a little bit at one time or another.
Right now.
I was going to say, there's so many examples.
Right now, we're doing reviews with folks that are literally 5 years away from retirement, and one couple was actually almost panicking because they could see that steadily each quarter they're losing money in their investments and they're not happy about it. And then it'll jump back up and then it'll go back down. It'll jump back up and it'll go back down a little farther, and then it'll jump up and never get back to where it was and then jump down a little farther. And this constant, you know, bumping up and down is enough to make anybody nervous. But if you're that close to retirement, I can certainly understand how it would really make you question, you know, what are we doing? And that's what they were doing. They were questioning themselves at this point. What are we doing? Why are we doing this?
Sure.
And literally the wife turned to me and she said, Chris, do you think we're crazy? You know, and I had to chuckle. It's like, no, but you're trapped. You're stuck in that psychotic mode of investing where you're doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a better result each time. We got to break that. You got to break that psychosis. You got to get out of that type of mentality and learn what the truth and facts are. And then again, focus on, just like yesterday's meeting, focusing on the intention of the money. What must the money do? Well, for this couple, it had to provide and maintain quality of life. They really enjoy the quality of life that they're living right now. They want to carry that over into their retirement. So we're simply building a plan that will facilitate that and actually guarantee that event to happen. So now that they are making this adjustment, they're going to be free of their mind. There'll be peace of mind for them in the fact that what we're doing will provide more than they need, actually, by the calculation. And so now they have the pile-up effect in their future waiting for them. And what better place could you plan a retirement income, right?
Right.
I mean, he is all about truth and facts and
right.
defending your wealth. And it's interesting that this was mirrored in a meeting that he had just prior to
right.
our discussion.
It's amazing.
You can get in touch with Chris Longworth and the team at Financial Education Group by calling 800-719-7917 and tune in to The Money Professor in Seattle on KIRO, Kiro, Saturdays at 8 a.m. or get the podcast on any platform that you subscribe to.
He said something there, and I've got an advisor who's often heard here, Eric Carney, who says, you know, what he was talking about, the purpose of your money. And it very simply, purpose determines placement.
Absolutely. What is the intention? What does it need to do?
Right.
It's probably the most important piece of that puzzle of knowing your why, knowing why you're placed or why you're placing money where you are and what the outcome needs to be.
Absolutely. And boy, we're going to have to wrap it up. It's episode 206, Financial Pizza. It is ready to go. If you want Financial Pizza delivered to you every week, just subscribe to it. We'll put it in your podcast collection. You can reach any of the advisors by calling them direct, 800-662-6808, or just text pizza to 600-700. I want to thank Christy again for hanging out with me and just really being a part of the show.
Thank you, Steve. This is the highlight of my week.
Well, mine too. And again, we really appreciate everybody listening. We'll be back next week with another episode of Financial Pizza.
Pizza!
Coach P Radio!
Information provided is for illustrative purposes only and does not constitute investment, tax, or legal advice. Information has been obtained from sources that are deemed to be reliable, but their accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed. Neither Peter J. Deruta or his guests are liable for the usage of information discussed. Always consult with a qualified investment, legal, or tax professional before taking any action. Annuity guarantees are based solely on the financial strength and claims-paying ability of the issuing company. Individuals should thoroughly review the contract for specific details of the product features and costs. Income payments and withdrawals from deferred annuities are generally taxable as ordinary income in the year they are taken.
Money management is provided by Equus Capital Management. Equus is an SEC-registered investment advisor located in San Rafael, California. Investment advice by Capital Financial Advisory Group, LLC, a North Carolina-registered investment advisor. Insurance advice given by Capital Financial and Insurance, a North Carolina-licensed insurance agency.